Now just take a moment and reflect on the lighting of that candle. Reflect on it being already lit within you. Feel that soft glow. Feel the power of that energy. And know that that power, that presence, that joyful creativity is within you at all times. And so let me know for each and everyone here present, and those who are unable to make it today, that that power, that presence, that enlightenment is within each and every one of us. It opens us up to greater things. That light within us is what we take to the world. And so as we allow that light within us to shine and shine brightly, we bless each and every one that is there in the world, that is in our world. And I release my word, knowing that that is true. It is so. And together we say, and so it is.
Integrity. We're going to talk today about integrity. This whole month, actually, we're going to talk about integrity. And integrity, according to the Oxford Dictionary, there's two definitions. Number one is the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. And the second quality is the state of being whole and undivided. So let's take a look at these two different aspects of integrity. The first is being honest. And what is honesty? What is honesty? Sometimes we think honesty is, well, I'm just going to tell you what I think about you and really be honest with you. Yeah. I'm just being honest. The other one that sometimes people think is, I'm going to dump all my woundedness on you. Let me tell you about my life and how horrible it was and what so-and-so did to me. That's being honest. Well, I mean, I'm just being honest with you. And that's not real honesty, is it? Well, it's kind of telling stuff, but it's not really honest. Don Miguel Ruiz in the Four Agreements tells us the first agreement and the most important agreement is to be impeccable with our word. And impeccable doesn't necessarily mean just that we keep our word. He says that impeccable means use your words to share love. Use your words to share love. See, love is our truest nature. Love is who we really are underneath all the other stuff, right? Some of us have more stuff to get through to find that love, and some of us have a little thinner layer. But we're all love underneath that. We're all spirit underneath that. God's in everything, and God is love. That infinite presence is love. So when we start sharing love, when we're speaking love, we're actually being honest. We're speaking our true self, our authentic self. Yes? There's another way that I like about honesty. There's an acronym called THINK. They take the word THINK and make an acronym out of it. And it means for anything, to think about anything I say, is it capital T true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring or uplifting? Is it necessary? The Buddhists would say, does it improve on the silence? How many of us would say less if we asked ourselves the questions before we opened our mouths, does this improve upon the silence? As a minister, I have to ask myself that about every Sunday morning. So I'm done. No. Is it necessary? And finally, is it kind? Is it true? Is it helpful, inspiring, necessary, or kind? And so it might be something that as we practice honesty, We think about that acronym of THINK before we speak. The other part of that first definition, having strong moral principles. Let's take a look at that, because sometimes that can get us into a little bit of trouble. Where do our moral principles come from? Good question to ask ourselves. Where do our moral principles come from? Last week, we looked at the idea of our oneness. In fact, all of last month, we were looking at oneness. And one of the reasons, because this whole year, we're looking at how to be how to take our spirituality out into the streets, how to move our spirituality from an internal process to being present in the world. And if we forget that we are all one, we can sometimes get messed up, right? You ever been with your Google Maps where it gets you messed up? Yeah? There was a street corner in Reading I was at one time where it sat there and said, go left, go right, go left, go right, go left. I mean, it's just back and forth. And it's just like, where do you want me to go? Okay. Where do our moral principles come from? We need to understand that we are one race. We talked about that quote from Bill Nye, the Science Guy, last week. We're all one race, but many tribes. We're all one. We're all one. And so as we think about our moral principles, we have to remember that, because often our moral principles come from our tribal consciousness or our tribal beliefs. My tribe believes this and your tribe believes that. And we're at loggerheads. And when we combine that with our need to be right, anybody else besides me? Okay, yeah. Right. I saw one hand in the back that really understands what I'm talking about, and the rest of you, I know you know. When we combine our moral beliefs, our moral principles, with our need to be right, we can see something that, like what happened last week at the United Methodist Conference, where one tribe conflicted with another tribe, and the tribe that was bigger and more powerful or more bullying or whatever voted to banish all the LGBTQ ministers and weddings and everything from the Methodist Church. Take a breath. Now, if you ask delegates from both sides of that equation, did you have integrity? Did you stand for your moral principles? What would they both say? They both say yes. So what we had was conflicting tribal beliefs. One tribe was based on oneness, the other tribe was based on exclusion. And so that's why it's important, before we stand for our beliefs, to ask ourselves, am I coming from a consciousness of oneness? Am I coming from a consciousness of love? Am I coming from a consciousness of seeing God in everything before I take that stand? It's why we looked at oneness last month, because we have to have that as a foundation. If I view someone else as separate, as the other, then I can do all sorts of stuff, right? I can get away in my own mind with all sorts of stuff. But if the stand we're taking is not in alignment with universal principle, we're standing on quicksand. We're standing on exclusion, exclusivity, rather than inclusivity. And if God is in everything, anytime we're practicing exclusivity, we are practicing excluding God, Spirit, love. Okay? Our community is experiencing a little tribal consciousness as we contemplate moving in with unity, right? Take a breath. So we got one tribe that's worried about the other coming into their place, causing disruption, meaning just things would be different, possibly even taking away from their congregation and their money. And we've got another tribe that likes to people please and likes to kind of settle for things for, you know, 10 years, right? More. Kind of wants to, we'll make it work. We won't really go for our magnificence, our excellence, our what we really want. We'll find a way to settle for what works and what's here, because we don't want to offend anybody. Take a breath. Ernest Holmes said, there are very few statements farther from the truth, the capital T truth, than to spout, God is good and everything is all right, therefore there is nothing to fear. It takes a deep working, the deep work of changing our consciousness to shift from what we're at now, wherever we are, in any place in our lives, to being in alignment with Spirit, where everything is truly good and all right. But oftentimes we're not, and we're out of alignment with that. Yes? Keep breathing. We're fine. So this brings us to the second part of that definition, the part about being the state of being whole and undivided. You know, when a building maybe has gone through like an earthquake, we say that there's a lack of structural integrity, right? And so do we have structural integrity for ourselves, or have the circumstances of our life caused a lack of structural integrity within us? The universe is whole and undivided. And it individualizes. It shows up in individual ways, but it's undivided, right? You with me? Okay. Each of us is a unique individual expression of the universe, but we are not divided. We are all one. We are all whole. When I look out at my garden, I see that the soil and the air and the water and the light all combine. And stuff comes up out of my garden, and I get crocuses right now coming up out of my garden, and I get pine trees coming up out of my garden. It's the same soil, right? But what are the seeds that are planted into that same soil is what shows up. But it's the same soil, water, air, and light. I've noticed that the plants tend to go towards what? The light. I was standing with my landlord, lives right next door, great guy. And we were looking back in my yard yesterday, or a couple days ago, and he said, is that tree leaning? And he was looking at a particular kind of a pine tree, and I said, well, and I looked at it more closely, I said, it's not leaning, but it's fuller on the side that's more towards the light. Then I noticed I've got a big pine tree in my front yard, and I looked at that, and as it gets to the top, it does start to lean over towards the west. And I said, that is interesting. Everything grows towards the light. We are each unique expressions, but we have, unlike plants, we have choice, we have volition. We can choose to grow away from the light if we want. We have that, what we call free will. And we are constantly planting seeds in the soil of this universal mind and of our own minds that take us closer to the light, further away from the light, that express, as John said, this candle stands for the light that burns within us. We can squelch it. We can use it to burn other people, or we can use it to light the world. What I find is that when we start to go against nature, we can do that for a while, but I remember the song, there's a song that went, I fought the law, I can't remember what the rest of it is. The law won! Yeah. In this case, we're talking about the capital L law, the law of cause and effect, the law of what I put out comes back to me. And the law always wins. And so if I put hatred and separation out, it comes back to me somehow or other. If I put love and community and compassion out, it comes back to me somehow or other. So we are constantly planting seeds in this one soil, allowing ourselves to stand in integrity with who we are. The truth, by the way, is we're always in integrity with who we are, but do we like what we're planting and who we are being in the world? Yes? We create heaven and hell in our minds. Jesus, a long time ago, says, you know, people are going to come and say heaven is low here, low there, but it's within you. It's within us. It's not a place. It's within us. And it's based on our perspective of life, right? See, a few weeks ago, some people looked at the snow and said, oh my God, this is hell. And others said, ooh, this is heaven. It was the same snow, right? And some of us looked at the snow and said, ooh, this is heaven. And then 3 days later, or 4 days later, after we're getting cabin fever, said, oh, this is hell. It was the same snow, right? So it's a perspective. You know, our sacred circles, we have sacred circles that meet about every quarter. And right now, they're working on the eight pillars of joy. And the first of those is perspective. Perspective. In the Buddhist tradition, the very first of the Eightfold Path is the path of relieving suffering. The first of those is right view, right perspective. Am I viewing this from a perspective that spirit would view it from, or am I perceiving it from my tribal belief system, which may or may not be accurate? Take a breath. Out of that perspective, out of our wholeness, out of our integrity, then comes something called congruence. And congruence is my life in alignment with what I say my beliefs are? See, if I say I'm not going to visit a bakery again, and I find myself in a bakery again, am I in congruence with what I'm saying? Correct. I might be in integrity with the fact that I really love bakeries and I'm going to go anyways, but that's not what I'm saying. So, are we in integrity? Are we, and that integrity shows up in form as congruence. We've all met people who we know are highly congruent with their lives, and we've all seen people who we know are not highly congruent with their lives, right? Okay. So congruence comes from living in alignment with universal principle. When we're truly, truly in highest level congruence, we are living in alignment with this universal principle, this love, this joy, this harmony, this understanding, our oneness and our interconnection. And as individually, this principle is individually expressed through, in, and as our lives. And as I stand in integrity, the question is, does it enhance the greater good? Does it create greater good? Does it harm no one, including myself? Is what I'm doing for the highest good for all, including myself? Sometimes we do highest good for all those people out there, but we don't include ourselves, right? That's called codependence. But is it for the highest good for all? And if so, we're living in real integrity. It's important that as we do this, we recognize that we are all God. At the same time, we're all remembering that. Yes? Anybody besides me ever forget that you're God in form and totally love and totally abundant and health and all that stuff? Okay. So we have compassion both for ourselves and for each other as we go through this process of learning. It's important to do this because sometimes we get, integrity can sometimes become self-righteousness. I'm so superior to you. We need to have compassion. We need to have compassion. So this week, I invite us to do two practices. The first one is to ask yourself a question, powerful question. What is stopping me from living in authentic integrity with the truth of my being? What is it that currently stops me or slows me down from living in integrity with the truth, the capital T truth, the highest truth of my being? And listen deeply and courageously. We ask that question internally. We ask that question to a deep wisdom self within us. What is it that's doing that? And listen deeply and courageously to the answer and be willing to make changes. Somebody asked me the other day, it's like, how do we make changes? And I said, the first step is to be willing. Just to be willing. I teach her, and I think it comes from other programs, it says, if you can't be willing, at least be willing to be willing. And if you can't be willing to be willing, at least be willing to be willing to be willing to change. I would say that all spirit needs is that little crack in the door and it'll seep through. We were talking in a group yesterday about yeast. Jesus uses the metaphor that the kingdom of heaven is like a little bit of leavening, which is yeast, left in a humongous mound of flour. If you understand how much flour he talks about in that parable, it's like enough to feed a village. He says it's like leaving a little bit of yeast in that. And so the willingness is being that little bit of yeast that will, over time, raise the whole. Raise the whole. Our life comes into greater alignment as we live in greater integrity. Our life becomes a place that's easier, that's more joyful, that's more loving, both to others and to ourselves as we live in integrity with our highest principles. So that's the first one. Ask yourself, what's stopping me? Or at least slowing me down from living in integrity. And then the second practice I invite you to do this week is to be willing to expand your expression of your authentic self. Some of us live, we all live. We all live in a sphere. However big or small it is, we all live in a box, in a sphere, in a circle, whatever you want to call it. Am I willing to expand that? This past week in the practical mysticism class, we had a meditation that the theme of the class was going from silkworm to butterfly. Out of Teresa of Avila's book, Entering the Castle. We're using Carolyn Mace's interpretation of that book. Moving from the silkworm to the butterfly. And do you know what it takes to go from the silkworm to the butterfly? Total disillusion of who you are, of who you were. It's called the dark night of the soul. Some of you know about the dark night of the soul. I would guess that probably almost everybody in this room at some point in time knows about the dark night of the soul. It's been said that people who are religious are afraid of going to hell, and people who are spiritual have already been there. So we've gone through the dark night of the soul in order to become a butterfly. Are we willing to expand? The question that we did in a meditation, we contemplated in a meditation, was, what is it that wants to dissolve in my life right now? What is it that wants to dissolve in my life right now? Interestingly for me, my idea of ministry is what's wanting to dissolve in my life right now. Take a breath, I'm not leaving. But my idea of how I've been doing ministry, of making sure I do it right, whatever that feels like for me, instead of doing it in a more authentic and expanded way, is what's wanting to die for me. And again, it doesn't mean that I'm leaving. Something is coming through and expanding. Doing the third Sunday night, the sacred service at my house, sacred time at my house, is one of the expressions of doing ministry in an expanded way, of coming together in just a deep meditation, deep connection with Spirit, is one of the ways I'm doing that. Okay? But something else is wanting to come through, just so you're warned. Want to show up in long flowing robes? No. No, something authentic it wants to show through. Something more. And I'm very clear that it's happening here, by the way. It's happening here. That's why I said I'm not leaving. So what is it that wants to come through you? And what's the expanded version? What's the greater light that wants to come through you? So that's what the second practice is, to be willing to expand your expression of this authenticity, of this greater light, of this God nature that you are. Being willing to expand that. When the prodigal son in the parable from Jesus comes to himself, you know, he has this moment of exhilaration. Hey, I get all the inheritance. I get all the money. I'm going to go party. And then he has this dark night of the soul experience where he ends up slopping pigs, right? Which in those days is about as low as a good Jewish boy could go. Today he would be homeless with a drug problem if Jesus was telling the parable today. When he comes to himself, when he remembers who he actually is, his life gets a whole lot better, right? And so this is the process with this, remembering who you really are and allowing more of that to express. So that's the two spiritual practices. One, asking myself, what is stopping me? What is slowing me down? And two, am I willing to express more of my authentic self? You willing to play with that this week? Yeah, me too. It's a powerful process. I want to close with a pair of quotes. First one is from Howard Thurman, whose book for the Inward Journey is our book for the month, if you want to follow along with it. And Howard Thurman was an African-American, started off as a Baptist minister, but I would say he moved into more of a New Thought Baptist minister later in his life. He lived in the last century from the early 1900s. I think he passed away in 1981, if I remember right. But this fabulous book called For the Inward Journey. He's the one who, by the way, wrote the wonderful Keep Fresh Before Me, My Moments of High Resolve. Many of you have heard that particular poem or that he wrote. He's the one who wrote that. He says, there is an awakening within us of the sense of our lives consciously in God's presence. We are constantly living. There's no spot where God is not. There's no, you know, God is in everything, as the song said. We are consciously living in God's presence. The habit of exposing the life, the motives, the dreams, the desires, the sins, all to God, make for the integrity of the person. Am I willing to just be who I am? With all of it. I went to a bakery last night. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It was damn good. Am I willing to be all of who I am? Am I willing to be that in God's presence? And you have to understand that that's a God that is love. It's not a God that's going to sit there and go, oh, I'm going to punish you for that. It's not that kind of a God. So are we willing to be that? To expose our life, our motives, our dreams, our desires, our sins, all of it to this, excuse me, Spirit. Because that makes the integrity of the person. And out of this flows the integrity of the act. And he quotes Psalms here. It says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. Am I willing to be known? Am I willing to be honestly in integrity with who I am? And to recognize that I'm loved in the universe, no matter who I am. See, in the story of the prodigal son, the father never stops loving the son. He never. It's not based on his actions. He never stops loving the son. And the final quote, and I kind of mentioned it, that quote brought up for me, but I want to do it because last week we watched the video of O.C. Smith, who became from a singer to a religious science minister, and he did this quote, and I looked at it and went, I want to do it like that. So, there is no spot where God is not. I love the handout when he did that. There is no spot where God is not. You are safe. You are loved. You are immersed in love. You can't get away from love. You can't get away from your wholeness. And so all we do is wake up to the truth of who we are. And I invite you this week to wake up more fully, to let the snow that was hiding who you are melt, and just let your beautiful blossoms emerge. Let's move into prayer. Knowing that there is this one presence, whether we call it God, the Tao, Buddha mind, whatever name we give it, it's just this one presence. This one. All there is. And we recognize that because it is all there is, we are and can only be, must be, have to be, there's nowhere else to be, one of it. One of it. Every single detail of us is one of this infinite presence. That there is an I that is beyond the stuff, the body, the mind, the deeds, the feelings. There's an I, capital letter I, that is always one of this infinite presence, that has never varied, never strayed, never been separate from it. And never will be. And so I speak my word that this week we come from that awareness of that oneness that we are. And we live in integrity with the authenticity of who we are. We let go of judgments of ourselves and others. We let go of our tribal beliefs to the best we can. And we simply bask in the light, the warmth, of this nature of who we truly are, this infinite presence, this love, this light, this joy, this beauty, this power, this peace that we are, this life that we are. We say yes. We say yes to that. We say yes to ourselves. We say yes to ourselves as that, because there is no separation. And so in great gratitude for the good that comes from that, because I know that as we do this, our lives blossom like the flowers in spring, blossom and grow. And we enjoy the process. We enjoy the beauty, and others enjoy the beauty of us. And so I release this word into that which we call the law, that process that moves it forward, the same process that knows how to bloom flowers, no matter how much snow has been dropped, knows how to do it. And does it consistently. Because that law is consistent, impersonal, and always at work. And so I know that this word returns fulfilled. That we are blessed. That we are the integrity of spirit in form. So it is.
So in the teen room today, we talked a little bit about our values and integrity. And kind of what we stand for. And one of the activities we did is we drew an image of ourselves, a face, an image, just any image, and then we drew around it things that we stand for. So it's kind of representing our values. And we also discussed what some of our personality types in the personality types like good versus evil and lawful versus chaotic. So we kind of talked about that. And it was all interesting and it all tied together. And before we separated, we talked about integrity and what integrity was, doing things right, even if no one's watching.